think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
Break it down. Live from the Gow Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com.
AGE, factory approved warehouse outlet.
Here's Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Hour number two. 713-780. ESPN is the number. 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on The Blitz Facebook page. Find The Blitz, click like, you're good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at AJ is the real, at Jongi Football, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show at 713-780-3776. And if you missed the first hour, all available at podcastarena.com. Go check it out. We talked about drinking. We talked about the Astros. We talked about J.J. Watt's hand and J.J. Watt's legs. And, yeah, that was pretty much it. A little football talk there. And but good stuff. So go check it out, podcastarena.com, full show podcast there. So if you miss anything, you can always go there. And you can also go there and pick up our handicapping book, our audio book, which is selling like hotcakes. People love it. So nothing but good reviews. I have yet to tell anybody they don't like it. Have anybody tell me they don't like it. I would ask if you're texting the show and you're someplace and you're saying the signal's bad. I don't have anything to do with the signal, so
fix it, Fred.
Email Jongli, okay? That's his job. Deal with him, because I'm the guy who reads the text, and I can't do a damn thing about stuff like that. I have nothing to do with it. You want to talk about how J.J. Watt's impact's going to be with one hand? If you want to talk about the Astros trade, you want to talk about, hey, the Rockets won last night. Are they going to bounce back? Any of that stuff, happy to respond, but things like that, I can't do anything about.
Since they did not get Sonny Cumbie, the Texas Longhorns have gone elsewhere, and they hired an offensive coordinator today.
Oh, they actually hired someone?
Yep, they hired somebody. Sterling Gilbert, who is considered one of the brightest offensive minds in football. He's been under Philip Montgomery at Tulsa, obviously. He's the co-offensive coordinator at Tulsa, for those of you who don't know the name. He worked under Syracuse head coach Dino Babers, now Syracuse head coach Dino Babers, and Art Briles, all who employed the balanced spread system. And Tulsa ranked 25th nationally in scoring this season, 39.5 points per game, mostly excelling through the air, 330 yards per game through the air, 11th in the nation, but still were able to put up 172 yards per game on the ground. So that looks like, it's an unknown hire, but it's getting a guy who's definitely looks like he's got some upside. So we'll see how it goes, but that's what they're going with.
All right, I'll say this: you're the University of Texas.
Yep.
Maybe he's the next up and coming guy, but you can't do better than Tulsa's offensive coordinator. I get that you want to get you some air raid and get into that type of offense, but I know they interviewed the Cal guy, mm-hmm. and that, I guess that didn't happen either. That just seems weird to me. You're Texas, and you can't get somebody other than Tulsa's offensive coordinator.
I'm not going to say it's not weird. It is weird, but I mean, I'm willing to give the guy the benefit of the doubt, see what he can do, and if he, it's also a guy who is probably looking for a big opportunity like this, and if he can make the most of it, good for him. If he can't, you're probably not paying the dude a ton of money. But that said, I also think Charlie Strong is kind of like hanging on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he is a Texas guy. You know, he's from Texas. He knows the state. He should help with recruiting. But, yeah, that's what they do. I guess Sonny Cumbie would have been definitely a sexier hire, but we'll see if this.
I just remember when Texas could get whatever assistant coach it wanted.
Oh, I do too.
And it wasn't that long ago.
But that's not now.
So, no, and it's I mean, you're going on a guy's reputation that he might become something, and you're getting into the Baylor thing there, but that just doesn't seem like a Texas type of hire to me. It just seems like, I don't want to say a panic hire, but it just seems like you are moving awful soon. When do you really need to do it now? It's not like you got to get a guy ready, you know, guys ready for a bowl game.
Right.
You got plenty of time, and you're Texas. I think you wait until, and you see if somebody gets blown out that you're not expecting. I wonder if they were waiting for if Dana Holgorsen was going to get blown out, because that's the kind of guy that, yeah, you go after as an offensive coordinator if he gets blown out as a head coach. But much like Les Miles, it costs too much money to get rid of him. So I think he gets another year. But I okay, good luck with that hire.
Yeah,
I did see a lot of Tulsa football this year, more than I would like. And scheme-wise, they look better. But they weren't that impressive. And there's nothing worse than a spread offense team that can't move the ball.
Nothing.
because you're off the field in a hurry, and the other guys start scoring. And somebody says Gilbert didn't even call the plays at Tulsa. I'm not sure exactly how that worked. I'm assuming Montgomery did. But, yeah, that's – okay, we'll see how it plays out. I think they just want to get that spread offense in there.
Well – I think that it could work. It might not. I don't know. I mean, this is one of those. I think it's a high risk, high reward hire, and it's not Jay Norvell. So,
well, there's that. They've got to be better on offense next year. So I guess they could almost bring in anybody. But it's okay. Good luck, Texas. 713-780 ESPN. Did you see ESPN ranked every single bowl game?
No.
1 through 40. I don't want to go through all 40 of them, but there's a few interesting ones. Would you like to know number 40?
What is the worst bowl game of all?
According to ESPN.
Alabama, Michigan State?
No. Number 40 is the Cure Bowl. San Jose State versus Georgia State.
And that's a pretty bad bowl.
Yeah, that's. I got to say I have almost zero interest in that. Right above that, Ohio versus Appalachian State in the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl.
That might be worse than.
Yeah, I think I might make that one worse. Well, what about this? Akron, Utah State is 38. Hey, Utah State's okay.
Yeah,
Akron's okay.
Isn't there a bowl with North Carolina A&T versus Alcorn?
No, that's like. I mean, it's not technically a bowl, right? That's FCS.
Okay.
But remember we had Herman Moore.
I thought I saw that on the bowl schedule, and I was like.
Oh, yeah, but it's not really a bowl.
Okay. They're just calling it the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl is what they're calling that.
Okay.
Which is coming up next Saturday.
So it's the Air Force Reserve.
Right. Not even the full-on Air Force.
The Quick Lane Bowl where we had Herman Moore on the other day, and he told us Jim Anderson. Jim Anderson.
You're getting choked up about this matchup, aren't you?
Yeah, Jim Anderson and Will Allen were two of the better receivers that were out there.
Central Michigan and Minnesota.
Yeah, 37 on the list.
Okay.
I would actually have that one a little bit lower. Your other dogs, Middle Tennessee, Western Michigan, Connecticut Marshall, Arizona, New Mexico is 34. I don't think that one's that awful. Georgia Southern, Bowling Green. Okay, now we're getting into some interesting bowls because they have Washington Southern Miss at 29. So now let's talk about some good ones.
Where's Kansas State, Arkansas?
Number 16.
Oof, that's a little high for my taste.
Well,
where's West Virginia, Arizona State?
Well, here's one for you.
I'm trying to think of what the worst, like,
where do you
major
think,
bowl
where do you think A&M versus Louisville ranks?
Oh, I don't have much interest in that.
Well, I know, I'll but go, you hate Aggie.
No, I mean, the way Aggies played.
They're not
the last
fun to
half
watch.
The season. Yeah, I'll go 20.
17.
Okay.
How is Auburn versus Memphis the 25th best bowl? That's actually, I'm more interested in that than I am A&M Louisville.
I am too.
Pittsburgh Navy's 26th. Would you ask about West Virginia, Arizona State?
Yeah.
That one is 27.
That's pretty bad. What about Penn State, Georgia?
Well, let's see. Penn State, Georgia checks in at number, drum roll please. Oh, it must be up there. It's higher than.
You got to use the find function on your.
Well, it's 14 in the Tax Slayer Bowl. I mean, the way they do this, they're listing them, and they've got stories on each little bowl game.
Right.
So it takes a lot of scrolling. LSU versus Texas Tech in the Advocare Texas Bowl.
That actually seems like a remotely interesting, at least entertaining game to me. There will be a lot of points scored, I think.
Number 12.
Okay.
All right, so here's your top 10. See if you agree with these. At number 10, USC versus Wisconsin in the Holiday Bowl.
That seems a little bit high.
It does for me, too.
A, watching Wisconsin is never exciting. And B, USC has been a huge disappointment all season long. So I'm tempered on that.
Here's one that might be a little low for me. I think that one's a little high for me. But number 9, Oklahoma State versus Ole Miss.
I think that's a fun game.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. At number 8, Florida State and...
Coug. That seems fair.
Yeah, I think that's about right for that bowl game.
I think that's around the interest level you'll always have with this... the non-Power 5 play-in school game.
It'll be lower if it's non-Power 5 teams like Toledo or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to care about that. But at least if it's a team that, I mean, from the AAC, at least, yeah, that's a, yeah, or one of the Mountain West teams, if it's one of the good Mountain West teams, like Boise or, all right, number 7 on the list, seems a little high for me, BYU versus Utah.
Oh, I could do without that game.
Yeah, that's okay. I get it's a holy war. Whoa, okay.
I think it's great that BYU and Utah are playing in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I don't think Las Vegas thinks it's great. They're probably like, oh, wonderful. Yeah. Not like these people are going to come in here and drink and gamble. Great. North Carolina and Baylor is number 6. I like that game. I think that's about right.
It depends on what Baylor shows
up.
Yeah,
if it's fourth string Baylor quarterback.
If it's the same Baylor that showed up against Texas, I am not interested in watching that.
Well, just depends on who's playing quarterback for him. Number 5, Oregon TCU in the Alamo Bowl. I think that's a
really fun game.
Yeah. Number 4, Stanford versus Iowa.
I think that's going to be a bludgeoning. So
yeah.
I'm not as high on that.
And plus, any game with Iowa, and it can't be the fourth best bowl game. Sorry, Iowa.
Yeah.
The Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl, which then Battle Frog, what the hell is that?
What was the video game? Like, remember the Ninja Turtles had those frogs? There was like 4 frogs, and I feel like they were called something like Battle Frogs or something like that.
Sounds like it should be the name of a racehorse. And it's Battle Frog. Not quite. All right, Notre Dame, Ohio State, number 3.
I think that's a good one.
Yeah, that's probably the most interesting game to me that is not a playoff game. And they, of course, have the playoffs 1-2, and they have Michigan State, Alabama as more interesting than Oklahoma, Clemson, which I disagree with. I think Oklahoma, Clemson is the game I'm more interested in. ATX asks, will y'all be at the Texas Bowl, so I can drunkenly run up and drop F-bombs? I remember when she did that. Yeah, I don't think we're invited anymore.
No.
Apparently, they're not doing business with us anymore. They've chosen to go with some other station, so.
Just kidding. Those were called the Punk Frogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not the same.
Punk Frog sounds like a pretty cool rock band name.
Attila the Frog, Genghis Frog, Napoleon Bona Frog, and Rasputin the Mad Frog. Were the punk
Battle
frogs.
Toads is the name of the video game.
Ah, that's what it was.
And Battle Frog is an obstacle course race designed by Navy SEALs. It's compared to the Spartan race.
I used to play that game, Battle Toads.
Boy, they must make a lot of money if they can sponsor a bowl game.
I guess so.
50 texts saying it was Battle Toads.
No, people love that Battle Toads.
Yeah, I love you guys. Because honestly, the Blitzers know everything. The stuff that we don't know, they know.
I remember that game. I didn't remember it was called Battle Frogs. But
713 says, pissed off Iowa guy is calling in as we speak. Yeah, remember the Iowa fan we had who just didn't understand why we wouldn't give him any respect?
Yeah.
And
I miss that guy.
Well, when we get to our bowl picks and I'm unloading on Stanford, I'm sure he'll call.
Oh, probably so. You know when he won't call? The day after the bowl game.
No. It's just like that knucklehead on our Facebook page who always tells us to suck it every game the Texans win. You know where he was this week? Nowhere. Anyway.
Live from the Gau Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Joining us now on the program is the man co-headlining UFC 194 and challenging for the UFC middleweight title. Luke Rockhold joins us on the program. Luke, how's it going, man?
Going great. Just prepping for war.
You're a big dude for a 185. What's the weight at right now? I know that, you know, it's day before weigh-ins. How close are you, and how's your body feeling right now?
I'm feeling all right. A little lighter than usual. I brought in a dietitian just to kind of calculate things, make life a little easier on me. So he does this thing called glycogen depletion. So it basically takes out the carbs out of my diet that kind of holds sugar, holds water in your muscle a certain amount. You do the math, like an extra like 5-6 pounds or something like that when it comes down to it. So rather than storing my muscle and have to suck that out, it just kind of, as I drink water, it flows, you know, everything flushes through. And then I only have to dehydrate, you know, another, and instead of 15 pounds, 15, 16, I do 9 or 10. And so I'm probably 90, woke up at like 96 or something like that this morning. So another 11 pounds.
That's not bad, not bad at all. This fight, while to me is a huge fight, and obviously it's for the middleweight championship, it's been a little bit, it's flown a little under the radar because Aldo McGregor has taken center stage. Do you like that, the fact that, you know, there's not a lot of buzz around your hype? You're probably doing less media than you do if you're headlining. Is this kind of refreshing to just be able to concentrate, focus on the fight itself?
I mean, it's I could care less. I think we have the stage to perform. We've done plenty of media ourselves for this fight. I don't think there's any lack thereof. probably the same amount as them versus their previous, you know, world tour they did, you know, before, you know, when the fight was originally supposed to happen. But for the fight, I think we were around the same load carrying. I'm going to go out there and perform and take advantage of the stage that we have. It's a great event. I mean, it's a great event because we're on it. McGregor and Aldo is a good card. We make it a great card. And so this is there's a reason why people are talking about it, because it has the two fights that really blow the top. We're going to blow the top off the MGM Grand.
I feel like you and Chris both exude a lot of confidence. And I thought this when you came to the UFC as a guy who watched you in Strikeforce and saw the Jacare fight and saw the Tim Kennedy fight, and know that you've been in there with really tough dudes and fought through these like grinding battles. And then you come to the UFC and the first thing that happens is the Vitor Belfort fight. And maybe a lot of people didn't immediately take you seriously as a contender at that point, but your confidence has never faltered. I mean, is that something that you've always had? Every time I see you leading up to a fight, it always seems like you have zero doubts that you could even potentially lose. Is that always been the case?
Yeah, you have to have 100% confidence in yourself. If you second guess yourself for 1 second, or if you don't believe you have what it takes, those openings will find you, and something will break you. I never thought for a second. Emotionally, I got invested in that Vitor Belfort fight. I knew what I was pissed off. I had to go to Brazil to prove myself. I didn't get any respect coming in to the UFC. They made me fight Vitor Belfort on steroids in the depths of Brazil, just in my debut. So try to make it as hard as possible on me, and I felt disrespected, and I carried a lot of weight on my shoulders, you know, going into that fight in Brazil. Just the fans are just going crazy, and I'm trying to go in there and beat this cheer, and you never know what you're going to encounter with a scientifically charged human being. So I was the only fight I really got that invested in, but being in there with him, I realized I'm better than these guys. I'm better than him. I got caught. Doesn't mean shit. I'm gonna bounce back, and I'll be back on top. There's not, you know, I didn't second guess myself the moment after I woke up and and realize what happened that fight. And, you know, I'm not second-guessing myself against Chris Weidman. I know I'm the better man. I know I'm going to go out there. I know I'm going to do my job.
Like I said, if people didn't watch you before the UFC, they don't know about those fights, the Jacare fight and Tim Kennedy fights, and they don't know the battles you've been through. Do you think that this fight will sort of, in a way, becoming the UFC champion will sort of validate your career and kind of make let people know that, listen, I've always been this good. You guys just didn't see it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people that are just blinded. They don't see outside the UFC, and they only think, UFC. Credit the UFC for marketing that way. Obviously, we've proven ourselves to Strikeforce, coming in and really dominating the ranks everywhere. I'm well. People think my biggest one is Lyoto Machida. Chris even said himself, I beat down his accomplishments with the older Brazilians, and he says I'm beating down my own accomplishment. No, it's not my biggest win. Lyoto was an easy win for me. Those wins, Jacare, Tim Kennedy, those were hard. Those were hard fought wins. And my whole point was Chris struggled with Machida. That was his toughest fight to date. And that was one of my easiest fights to date. So, yeah. I'll get some validation. I'm still, you're always seemingly, Chris is still seeking validation. Everyone's going to second guess you. Everyone's going to do this, that. You know, for me, it's about the world title. I could care less what people think about me at this point. It's nice to get credit, but in the end, it's who's going to get paid and who's got the belt and who's living the good life.
Stylistically, do you feel comfortable with Chris wherever the fight may go?
I feel great. I feel absolutely great about it. I think Chris is going to take me down. He's going to enter into a realm that he's not really ready for. He's got wrestling, jiu-jitsu. He's got positioning. He's not really a smooth operator when it comes to the groundwork. I'm gonna baffle him. I'm gonna reverse position. I'm gonna threaten him everywhere. And then I think he'll be the one scrambling and trying to get back to his feet. And then we're gonna fight my game on the feet. I feel like I'm a better fighter. I'm slicker on the feet. And I got more weapons and I got more power.
UFC 194 taking place this Saturday, December 12th on pay-per-view. Of course, Chris Weidman will be taking on my guest Luke Rockhold. I'm really excited for this fight. I think obviously a lot of people are. The event sold out. I expect it's going to do big pay-per-view numbers. Best of luck to you, Luke. You're one of my favorite fighters to watch, and I'm really excited to see you get your chance at the title.
Thanks, man.
All right. That's Luke Rockhold. Appreciate the time, man.
Live from the Gau Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. We'll get back to your phone calls in just a minute. If you have any fantasy questions that would work for general questions, not this guy or that guy, go ahead and text them at 713-780-3776, and we will ask our guest, Christopher Harris, fantasy football expert, runs harrisfootball.com. Fantastic podcast that I know a lot of you guys listen to every day. Christopher, how the heck are you, sir?
I'm doing great. What's going on down there?
Oh, sports and stuff, the things we do every day. So I got to ask you, from a running back perspective, have you seen a stranger year than this one? It used to be you had to get the stud running backs early, and some of them you still need to grab, but as you get into the playoffs, is this the weirdest year you've seen in terms of how running backs are used and who's the stud and who's not?
I'm going to say it's a tie with 2 years ago. The Ray Rice year, it was a bad first round that year too, but this has been bad. There's no question about it. It's going to, I was saying on the podcast today that my life is going to be miserable next summer when I recommend the first five picks or so be running backs, and everyone's going to be like, are you an idiot? Three quarters of the first round running backs last year all got hurt, you dummy. Of course, everyone's gotten hurt. Who are you going to take? Rob Gronkowski? Awesome. Who are you going to take? Dez Bryant? Terrific. It feels like we've just had a lot of injuries. But I think we have a lot of injuries every year, and I think we sort of forget. It has been a lot of high-profile guys, though, and just, the fact that they get spaced out so much. It's like one more thing with Mark Ingram.
Well, and it's not just the running backs, because if you drafted Andrew Luck ridiculously high, you're not very happy right now either.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
So,
or Russell Wilson. Or Russell Wilson. Couple weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, about time. And you know, a lot of people had the you got the Brady discount in drafts this year, and it looks like that paid off. I mean, it's a crapshoot. Peyton Manning went before Brady in most leagues. Every position has those problems.
Yeah, I fully agree, and yeah, I mean, it's like the who is the best draft draft value on the board? Probably Devontae Freeman, right? And he's probably still your fantasy MVP. I think he went out of the top 100.
Yeah.
Well, what advice would you give to people? Because I'm not still alive in any of my leagues, so do you have a different approach here now that you're at the playoffs, or is it basically just the same thing you've done all year? Find the best matchups and put your best group out there.
I think it's pretty much the same. You know, it's easy for me to say in theory, oh, it's exactly the same, you know, but a lot of times you're choosing between really similar seeming options as you've been all year. And, you know, I think some of the time it does make sense just to look at, you know, take a hard, long look at your team and your opponent's team and say, okay, a lot would have to go right for me here to do well here. And so maybe I, you know, if I have some similar seeming options, I might go with a player I perceive has the high, if everything booms, you know, maybe Deshaun Jackson, you know, kind of upside. And on the other hand, if I'm playing against someone who I think I should thump, you know, I'm probably not going to play Deshaun Jackson. I think I'm, you know, if it's a similar seeming option, I'll take the guy who's going to give me, you know, sort of the rock solid 10 points and just rely on everyone else to do the heavy lifting.
What do you do if you've got Gronk? I mean, obviously you're not going to know until Sunday night, and who knows whether or not the guy's going to play. What do you do in that situation?
Well, hopefully the Gronk owner owns Scott Chandler, and that would solve a lot of problems, right? Unfortunately, as you know, there's not a good solution on the Texans. And then, you know, is Will Tye any sort of solution for the Giants on Monday night? You know, I guess probably of the three other teams who would play at, you know, the same time or later, you know, Jordan Cameron's been garbage. I would probably take Will Tye over Jordan Cameron. Maybe Tye would be the guy if you wanted to wait. I mean, I'm in Massachusetts, and the speculation is very strong here that he's not playing this week, and that the Texans will be the last team that doesn't see him before his comeback. But don't take that to the bank. You know, the Patriots aren't going to tell anyone. This is all reading the tea leaves, and no, there are no sources on this. There won't be any sources until Sunday, and that's when the national guys will start making calls, and we'll start to get some leaks. And even then, with the Patriots, those leaks aren't even always right. So my gut tells me he doesn't play, but boy, this is a bad time for it.
You know, I see more and more, and we kind of talked about the running backs that have fallen off, and receivers haven't done that as much, but when a receiver loses his quarterback or something like that, a lot of guys who were drafted as number one receivers just haven't looked like it the last couple of weeks. And can you look at guys like Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Alshon Jeffrey's a little bit different, you know, a different piece, but all those, Randall Cobb even, are these guys still wide receiver number ones like they were at the beginning of the season?
Nope. That's an easy answer. I guess to some degree, it's like, you know, given where we drafted him, if we held on to him, or given what we gave up when we traded for him, you know, we probably don't have two, three other options on our teams at wide receiver who are better than those guys. So maybe the distinction between being the number 7 wide receiver and the number 17 wide receiver is somewhat moot. Like, we're going to have to start him anyway. So I guess what does it matter where that dummy Harris ranks him? But no, I mean, how can you look at Dez and say he's anything close to what he would have been? I mean, I think he was the first receiver taken in drafts on average this year. And there's no way you'd consider him top 10 with Castle throwing it to him. And I feel the same way with Demaryius in a latter-day Broncos offense, and Randall Cobb hasn't, you know, he's been okay, but not great. No, I think none of those guys right now are, you know, we got DeAndre Hopkins's, and we got the Allen Robinsons, and, you know, feels like a different group.
Are you in love with every offensive player on Tampa this week?
Well, it is a little bit paint by numbers, and I'm just, you know, I want to put the brakes a little bit, just because I'm remembering Hopkins' game against the Saints. It was like everyone else went off except Nuke, and that, you know, was considering that was the player everybody picked in DFS, and it was the player, you know, who everybody said, oh, he's the number one wide receiver of the week. You know, you just got to watch out. But, of course, there's, you know, I'll tell you, in a DFS ticket that I'm playing, I stacked Jameis Winston, and Vincent Jackson, because he's, you know, half the price of Mike Evans. Certainly, I don't, you know, whether or not I rank them, you know, number four or number 14, they're all pretty darn startable. You know, Evans and Doug Martin are going to be startable every week, no matter what. Winston has a lot of streamer appeal. I totally get it. And I think Vincent Jackson's an okay sort of high upside number three fantasy receiver.
For those of us who are down to just playing daily, and Lamont has a good question here. Why is DeSean Jackson still so cheap when he's obviously been coming on pretty lately?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what it comes down to is we don't know the algorithms that create those salaries, whether you're playing DraftKings or FanDuel, and they're different algorithms. They don't always necessarily correspond with just with fantasy point production. I think somewhat ownership percentage is factored in there. I mean, there have been weeks on DraftKings this year where Adrian Peterson was the number one running back of the week and actually saw his salary go down the next week, which tells you clearly there's multiple factors, you know, used to create those salaries, and one of them must be ownership percentage. And I think DeSean Jackson is sort of a tough guy to trust in daily leagues because he gets you, you know, 3 for 102 and 2 touchdowns, or 2 for 17, you know, and I understand why sometimes people shy away from him.
What do you think is going to happen with the daily fantasy? I mean, we're having so many, you know, states now declaring it gambling, and do you think that we've kind of missed the golden age here, that this is going to go the same way that online poker did?
You're talking to somebody who no longer works for ESPN, so is so not tied in that, you know, I'm really just, you know, completely speculating. But, you know, my gut tells me that online poker companies didn't have investors like Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones and, you know, ESPN and NBC Sports, and somewhere down the road, there's too much money at stake for all of those people to take a bath and to, you know, miss out on projected revenues and stuff like that. So, you know, I guess I'm as cynical as they come. And in the end, I think the state's motives here are utterly cynical. You know, you're just fine with the state lottery as long as you get your chunk. And I think as long as they get their chunk out of this, they're going to be like, oh, it turns out it's not gambling, or, you know, it turns out it's okay with us. I don't think this is a moral stance on the part of anybody. You know, I think this is a lot of people with their hand out, and I think eventually the right hands will be rewarded.
Well, I agree, but I just wanted to hear you say that. So there you go. Christopher Harris, fantasy football expert, runs harrisfootball.com. Follow him on Twitter at @HarrisFootball. Christopher, as always, man, appreciate the time, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Well, you know, we got a little Patriots-Texans going on here, so that's my team. I'm a little worried about coming down there, but, you know, we'll see how it goes.
You have nothing to worry about. Nothing
you
whatsoever.
Say that. We just lost to the Eagles, man.
Well, yes, the Eagles are crap, and that was a bad loss, but I don't anticipate you giving away 14 points on special teams and Brady pick sixes, so you should be fine.
Here's hoping.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll have a gym of the day. Also want to respond to a couple things that people are saying about the Texas OC job. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Live from the Gau Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. The holiday season is party season, and we want to hook you up with a holiday party courtesy of Tecate and Tecate Light. Listen this week for your chance to win a Tecate qualifying prize pack and be entered into the grand prize drawing to win a holiday party. You and 9 of your BFF co-workers will kick up your holiday heels at Taps House of Beers in the Heights on Thursday, December 17th, courtesy of Tecate and Tecate Light. John, you didn't write this, did you?
He did.
He didn't write this?
No.
One. Okay. I'm just 9 of your BFF co-workers will kick up your holiday heels. Okay.
Don't hate.
You're my BFF co-worker.
Would I get invited if you won?
Yes.
Okay. Because I would have to invite you guys. Because
especially since it's going to be presented by Tecate, there's going to have to be people that are going to be able to drink.
Ah. Well, I can do that.
True. Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'm going to respond to a texter here. It says, Fred, stop being a Richard. He actually says the other word. Everyone has to start somewhere. Just because it's Tulsa doesn't mean anything. You weren't hosting a primetime talk show straight out of college. Well, first off, I wasn't in talk radio straight out of college, but I did get hired by one of the biggest newspapers in the country straight out of college. So, yeah. But you contradicted yourself. Everybody has to start somewhere. Just because it's Tulsa doesn't mean anything. If you're Texas, and if I'm being a dick by basically saying I have higher expectations of the University of Texas and who they hire than you do, then okay. I'm a giant one. And guess what? I am every day because I question hires all the time. And all I'm saying is if you're the University of Texas, I expect more from you than hiring a guy at Tulsa who didn't call plays. I think that program should be at a better place than that. It should be at a place where they can get a guy who's been at a step above that or at least been calling the plays and had success. And listen, 832, I guarantee you I watched a lot more Tulsa football than you did this year. I wasn't all that impressed. So, as Rottweiler said, maybe it's a good thing he wasn't calling plays. But if that makes me a dick, so be it. I'm sorry that I think Texas is better than that. I don't know if you're upset that I'm insulting Tulsa or that you're a Texas fan who thinks you got the greatest hire in history. We'll see. I hope it works out. Sometimes it does. Sometimes the obvious name is not the best name. But more often than not, man, I want guys with track records at better places than that and a more successful offense than what they had this year because they weren't very good. Had some good numbers, also turned the ball over a lot, and were one of the bottom feeders in the AAC. Now, that's not as embarrassing as being a bottom feeder in Conference USA, but that's not exactly the first place I would have looked to go get a coach. Doesn't mean I'm right. Obviously, I'm a dick, and I don't care.
I agree with the last part.
Well, you know what? That's what we are. That's what we do every day. So, yes, I'm going to question stuff, and I'm sorry that I expect UT to be better than that. Now, I hope you drove off the road. All right, let's do the Zadok Jewelers Gym of the Day.
The Gym of the Day. It's the Gym of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gym of the Day.
But I do appreciate the text other than you calling me a dick. All right, we go to Louisiana. And DJ Holly Grove will appreciate this one because it's actually from Holly Grove. Where a woman, 32-year-old Katrina Lampton Tollett, her husband was dead, clutching a towel against a stab wound that authorities believe she inflicted hours earlier. Instead of calling authorities, what do you think she did?
I don't know. She called
a professional cleaning service to help remove bloodstains throughout the house.
Now that makes more sense.
Before a pre-scheduled landlord inspection. An arrest warrant application filed in court gives details. She was booked with second-degree murder and obstruction of justice in the stabbing death of her 42-year-old husband. Authorities placed her on suicide watch after her arrest. But basically, public defender said in the court that the arrest warrant suggests that this was either self-defense or an accident. Says this was not a premeditated crime. But instead of calling the police because of the self-defense or accident. No, the first thing she did was call a cleaning service.
Makes sense.
Get this thing cleaned up.
Makes sense. Well, how did it go? How did it work out?
Well, it didn't work out because once there's blood there, obviously they're going to...
I should ask Aubrey Theodi if they can get up blood.
Oh, that's a good plan. Next time talk to Aubrey.
If I commit a murder, can you guys help clean it up? Also, are they discreet about things like that?
Yeah, because
I bet if we ask him on the air, he'll have to say we don't do things like that. But I bet if I ask him off the air, we might get a different answer.
That's good to know because there might come a time. Like I'm getting a little fed up with my wife. There might come a time where an accident happens in my place, okay. And I need to clean it up. That's a joke. Joshua says,
"I didn't hear any of that." Yeah. So
no, neither did anyone else. But I'd be curious. I'm sure they've had to clean up bloodstains before, but I'm guessing the police already knew about it. Joshua says, as a UT alum, I can tell you I'm holding my breath. They could have done better. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, but I think you should have higher expectations. That was my point. But I'm a dick, so who cares?
Alabama running back Derrick Henry wins Walter Camp Award. For anyone who was curious on that.
Another 281 says UT can have Jake Spavital. poor Jake. The The bloom is a little bit off that rose. So, all right, 713-780-ESPN.